session. And first, I'd like to ask all of you that have cell phones, for the sake of our guests and our presenters, to please turn your cell phones off until after these presentations are over. Our first presenter, Dr. Emil Pinta, is a retired psychiatrist from Columbus, Ohio. He began record collecting at Cleveland Area Salvation Army and Volunteers of America stores in the late 1950s. His collecting interests are best described as eclectic and include jazz, operatic, historical, and country and western records. He has contributed articles to Record Research, New Amarola Graphic, and Victrola and 78 Journal. In the 1980s, he published a discography of the American tenor Daniel Pierce. This is his first ARCE presentation. Dr. Pinta will be speaking to us about the first RCA Victor recording band of 1948, Petrillo, Truman, and the 1948 recording band. Won't you join me in welcoming Dr. Pinta?
Okay, the first part of my talk will present some details about the actual recording. Titled the first RCA Victor recording of 1948. That's not my title, that's the title that RCA Victor gave to it. And in the second part, I'll discuss some of the background of the recording and also its historical significance. And then finally, in what I'm sure is going to be an anticlimax, we'll actually get to hear the recording itself. The New York Times, in December 15, 1948, announced the end of an 11 and a half month recording ban by the American Federation of Musicians. The article featured photos of James Petrillo, president of the AFM, and David Sarnoff, head of RCA. The Times article reported, "At the RCA Victor Studios, a chorus of Metropolitan Opera stars made a special non-commercial recording of I'm Just Wild About Harry to be presented to President Truman. Mr. Petrillo led the singers in their rendition of the song and also recorded a greeting to the president." Now, I'm not sure how often the Times made reference to a special pressing 78 RPM, but it couldn't be all that often. This is a photo of the label of the record referred to in the Times article. It's titled "The First RCA Victor Recording of 1948. The label provides the following information. Gives matrix number D8MB4077. For those of you familiar with the RCA matrix numbering system at the time, D indicated the fourth decade, 8 was the eighth year, 1948. M was a letter that RCA used to signify transcriptions and, in some cases, special pressings, and B indicated a 10-inch recording. It was recorded on December 14, 1948 at 5:26 p.m. The song is I'm Just Wild About Harry, and the label also states it contains a greeting to President Truman by James C. Petrillo. And 12 identified vocalists are listed on the label. It's a little blurred up there, but don't worry, because I've got some other slides where we'll talk more about the listed identified artists. First of all, the title, First RCA Recording of 1948, is a little bit of a misnomer. It's not entirely accurate. It was the first Victor recording made with the blessings of the AFM that utilized AFM musicians. RCA, like all the other record companies, pressed records during the ban. They pressed a number of reissues. They also recorded songs by vocalists. Vocalists were not generally members of the AFM, so there would be singers that would be accompanied by choral groups or by small groups. And Petrillo did not regard the harmonica as a musical instrument, so harmonica players were not asked to join the AFM, so during this time there were quite a few recordings issued accompanied by the harmonica. And also RCA pressed records with its divisions in other countries, primarily in Latin America, Mexico, and Cuba. There were quite a few Spanish language RCA records that were cranked out during this time. But in general, since orchestras, of course, are important and instrumental accompanists are important and are really critical to the recording industry, the title isn't that much of an exaggeration. These are the identified vocalists on the recording. They include Perry Como, Marilyn Cotlow, Tommy Dorsey, Chloe Elmo, Thomas Hayward, Dorothy Kirsten, Jan Pierce, Gladys Swartout, Ferruccio Tagliavini, Lawrence Tibbett, Fran Warren, and Leonard Warren. Now you can see it's more than just a chorus of Met Opera stars. Included several pop singers, most notably pop artists Perry Como and Tommy Dorsey. And some of these vocalists had more star power than others, but certainly star status and headliner status probably could be ascribed to Kirsten, to Pierce, to Swartout, Tagliavini, Tibbett, and Leonard Warren. So it's quite an illustrious group of singers that are appearing on this record. Now, this record does not appear in any of the discographies that I've seen of any of these vocalists. That includes several published discographies of Tommy Dorsey, an online discography by Perry Como, an excellent discography by William Moran of Lawrence Tibbett, and an also excellent discography of Leonard Warren by ARC member Barry Crawford. And in the 1980s, I published a discography of Pierce, and I had no awareness of this record, so I think it's safe to say that it doesn't appear in any of the catalog files under the artist's name at what was at one time the RCA listings department. So this led me to develop a suspicion, a bothersome suspicion, that maybe these singers really didn't all sing on this recording like it said that they did. And maybe this was all some sort of a trumped up promotion gimmick by RCA and Petrillo to be presented to President Truman, and that they just listed a group of their popular recording artists. But I don't think that's the case. Not too long ago, this photo surfaced on the internet, and it was said to be a photo from the New York Star, which was a short-lived tabloid-type newspaper, New York newspaper that was in existence from 1947 to 1948. And you can see here these singers are apparently at a recording studio, and there's a sign in the back that says something about recording band being over. And the back of the photo identifies the singers from left to right, Thomas Hayward, Leonard Warren, Gladys Swartout, Lawrence Tibbett, Jan Pierce, Marilyn Cotlow, and behind Cotlow is Tommy Dorsey, and Fran Warren, Perry Como, Dorothy Kirsten, and Chloe Elmo. Now, the one missing, there's 11 here, the one missing from this group is Tagliavini. But I think he was in there, I think he was off to the left, I don't think you can see him. And I'll show you why. If you look at the somewhat distinctive blouse that Ms. Swartout is wearing, and behind her the stripes and Leonard Warren's tie, and Dorothy Kirsten's black hat, and black outfit, you can see that this is identical to a photo that appeared in Opera News from January 17, 1949. This shows the three people I mentioned, along with Jan Pierce and Tagliavini. And unless these people were wearing the same clothes on different days, very unlikely for the women especially, I think, wouldn't be for me, but for these people, I think it's unlikely. You see they're wearing the same outfits. And if there's any further doubt that they actually did participate, Time Magazine described the recording event in a brief article entitled One for Harry. They did not provide any photo. The article described the vocalists practicing the words to I'm Just Wild About Harry in RCA's Studio One while waiting for Petrillo to arrive. He arrived with Sarnoff just before 5 p.m. and he muffed the first version of the Christmas greeting to Truman and blamed it on the attractiveness of the women that were present. Time reported that 9 Met headliners were helped out by Perry Como and Fran Warren, and afterwards Como rushed, according to the Time article, to Studio 2, where he recorded RCA Victor's first commercial record after the band, The Missouri Waltz, set to be Truman's favorite. So what is the background as to how this record came to be and why all the hype about Truman? Well, certainly the key figure in the recording band has to be James Caesar Petrillo. He was president of the American Federation of Musicians from 1940 to 1958. And here he is on the cover of Time, January 26, 1948, right at the start of the recording band. And the cover shows someone's foot, presumably Petrillo's, pressed down on a stack of 78s. Petrillo was born and raised in Chicago. He came from a poor family. He had only a fourth grade education, and as a youngster, apparently sold newspapers to help support his family. He played trumpet in the early years, but discovered that his real skills were as a union organizer and as a labor leader. He was elected president of the Chicago local in 1922, and I think being president of a union in the 1920s and 30s must have been a pretty tough job, particularly in Chicago. He had death threats, kidnapping threats. At one point, the porch of his home and the windows of his home were blown out by a bomb, and he traveled in a bulletproof car accompanied by bodyguards. But he did earn a reputation as a tough-talking and often controversial leader, and even his enemies had to admit that he was honest. He was elected president of the AFM in 1940, and when he was elected, the membership was 134,000, and by 1940 it had increased, by 1948 it had increased to 232,000, and he became the highest paid union leader in the United States. When he took over as president, he had two goals. One was to unionize the Boston Symphony Orchestra, which was the last major U.S. symphony not in the union, and the other was to gain support for a recording band. Petrillo waged war against all forms of what he called canned music that replaced musicians' jobs. Records, transcriptions such as Muzak that were played in restaurants, jukeboxes and bars and saloons, records broadcast over the radio, and movie soundtracks. We saw in one of the presentations about cylinders, about a group of cylinders being set up in lieu of an orchestra. That was one of the examples. It was a classic example of technology replacing labor. And probably a modern counterpart is the Writers Guild strike that took place at the beginning of this year, in which the technology in this case, was the internet and mobile devices. So in June 1942, he announced a recording band that would begin on August 1st. This band was from August 1942 to November 1944 for most of the major record companies, and Decca had signed an agreement with AFM in September 43. In calling this band, the AFM bypassed the points of play, like broadcast stations, jukeboxes, restaurant owners, and went to the point of origin, the recorded music at the recording studios. Petrillo wanted royalties paid by record companies for each record made that would go into a union welfare fund for unemployed musicians. And the ban ended when the major record companies agreed to pay between 0.25 cents to 5 cents for each record made, depending on the price of the record, and 3% of profits for transcriptions. In 1946, record royalties amounted to $1.7 million, and they were $2 million in 1947. And you have to multiply this by a factor of about 8 to get the figures in today's dollars. The contracts were for 3 years, and they were due to expire at the end of 47, at the beginning of 1948. The 1948 ban went into effect on January 1st. And although Petrillo gave several reasons for calling this band, very similar to the reasons he had given in the first band, the deciding factor was conflict with the federal government over the Union Welfare Fund. In June 1947, a Republican Congress passed the Taft-Hartley Labor Act, restricting the power of labor unions. Taft-Hartley was passed over the veto of Truman, who called it a Slave Labor Act. Here's a song of the time, a song sheet called the Taft-Hartley Blues. And words and music are by Norman Luboff, a 30-year-old songwriter at the time who later gained fame in the 60s and 70s as director of the Norman Luboff Choir. This contains the refrain, "I've got those anti-labor Taft-Hartley blues." One stipulation of Taft-Hartley was to outlaw union-controlled welfare funds that distributed to union members whose employers did not contribute to the fund. In other words, the fund could only be paid to musicians who had generated the funds. This wouldn't work for the AFM union fund because only a very small percentage of its 200,000 plus members were really recording musicians. I've never really run across anything that explained why this particular stipulation was there, but I suspect that Congress had concerns about these huge funds being under control of union bosses with no control over who was going to be receiving the funds. At any rate, in December 1947, Petrillo became so enraged that he vowed no AFM musician would ever record again. In December 1948, 11 and a half months later, into the ban, the issue was resolved when the U.S. Attorney General and the Secretary of Labor, acting on Truman's behalf, ruled that the AFM union fund would be legal if it was managed by a non-union trustee appointed by the Secretary of Labor, and recording was restarted on December 14th, 1948, as we've already mentioned. The royalties paid by the record companies were similar to the pre-1948 ban, although a more complicated formula was used in estimating what percentage of royalties would go into the fund. The song "I'm Just Wild About Harry" originated in 1921. It was written by Cecil and Blake and introduced in the musical Shuffle Along. But in 1948, it became Truman's campaign song. It was said that Cecil and Blake were favorably inclined towards Truman because he had integrated the armed forces. Interestingly, in the original 1921 version, the song was an election song too for a person by the name of Harry who was running for the office of mayor in a city. Seems that Petrillo and Truman became political buddies. In 1949, Truman picked Petrillo to be the music director for his 1949 inauguration. And here they are at a 1954 AFM convention, giving a rendition of "Hail, Hail, the Gang's All Here." So now we'll get to actually hearing what's on the record. And first is the greeting to President Truman by Petrillo.
And I need to find the eject for the... See, it's not...
Closed. There we go. It's that one right there. That should do it.
Mr. President, it is a pleasure and a privilege to extend to you, on behalf of 237,000 members of the American Federation of Musicians, the season's greetings. There is no one to whom we would rather help dedicate this first recording of 1948 than to you, a fellow musician and a great president. If you will pardon my rewording of a familiar wish, may I say to you a Merry Christmas and a Truman New Year.
As you can see, it has very little artistic merit. I mean, could be a bunch of people singing at a party or maybe even at a bar for that matter. It's hard to say. And I've listened to this many times, tried to pick out certain singers, but I think I could hear Jan Pearson there, but I'm not sure. Probably more my imagination. So in summary, I believe this record has importance in several areas. As a recording of research and discographical interest consisting of a highly unusual combination of popular and operatic artists that is not included in published discographies, and also as a vestige or artifact of the U.S. labor movement and recording bands, and in particular the 1947 Taft-Hartley Labor Act, in which Truman interceded on behalf of labor. So these are some references that I used, and my email address down there. I'm also in the ARSC directory and on the attendee list. If anybody wants to have any images from this or has any questions, or you can just email me at that address.
We have time for a few questions. Are there any questions? Yes.
Is there any way of knowing how many copies were made?
No, I don't. This is the first one I've run across. I'm sure there are others. I imagine they were all distributed to the people that participated in it. This was presented apparently to Truman. There's a on the online, you can find a diary of Truman, and I think on January 18th or so, it said that Petrillo met with Truman, presented him with an honorary card because Truman played the piano, and made him an honorary AFM member, and I would guess that he presented him with the record at that time. But I ran across it on the internet, on eBay actually, because I always search for Jan Pearce, and I've collected his recordings for about 50 years, and this was the first one that I run across. So they're not too common, I don't think.
Other questions? I have one question.
Yes.
Do you know why Victor chose to issue that with the acoustic style wing label?
Oh, no. Well, now their transcriptions sort of look like that. Those thesaurus, RCA thesaurus transcriptions seem to have that wing on there. Anybody? I hadn't thought about that before. Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, there is a newsreel of this. I remember seeing it in some documentary with all of them lined up. Just the photo. So there is. I do remember seeing something in some documentary.
With them actually singing it.
With them actually singing, or at least setting up for the film.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Good.
Great.
Any other questions?
Let's see how we get this out of here.
Thank you very much.
All right. Let me close.